Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. With me, as always, is Kyle, and we are going to have some bye week fun. We didn't have a Bears game
this week
last
chatter.
Weekend. We're going to have a blast. We get to talk about anything but the Bears this week, Kyle. So what do you want to talk about?
Well, we'll work a little Bears in at the end because we're
Kyle.
We'll do it lightly. Bears adjacent because we're going to talk about this week's opponent, obviously, a little bit. But yeah, no, we got some bye week topics. When the bye week comes along, you know, we've been talking nonstop Bears for months at this point. We haven't really, other than our lovely league preview with our boy Nick, we haven't really gotten into too much happening around the league. You know, and that's kind of the highlight of the off season sometimes. Get to, you know, in the draft and you get to poke around a little bit, not just view everything through the lens of the Bears. So there's some stuff happening around the league. Aaron Rodgers is flailing. He's trying to get the whole band back together, but they just can't carry a tune anymore. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on. You got, you got the Lamar Jackson, who just won MVP, his second MVP, probably having his best season right now anyways. And meanwhile, Derrick Henry is just casually maybe going to on pace to set the all-time rushing record next to the guy. So a lot going on there. I mean, just so many things to discuss. And we're not going to discuss any of those things that I just mentioned. That was a red herring. I just threw those out there. But yeah, we got some stuff to discuss that things that piqued my interest that I wanted to get your take on, Travis. And number one, this is a team that the Bears kicked the shit out of. This is a team that the Commanders, our upcoming opponent, just kicked the shit out of with Marcus Mariota. And I guess the question, and we talked about the trade, and I think we've seen enough from Caleb Williams already. We talked about the trade earlier this offseason. Like, if Caleb is good, that has to go down as the worst trade in NFL history, potentially. And the Panthers are a wreck. They are a ruin. I'm looking at this roster, and I'm just like, obviously they're moving on from Bryce Young. You know, they can say whatever they want to say, but you don't make that move and then go back to the kid on purpose. They're going back to them on accident this week because Andy Dalton was in a car accident. But they're going to move on from Bryce Young. They're probably going to draft another quarterback, which is hilarious in and of itself if you're familiar with this quarterback class at all. But, like, where do the Panthers even fucking go from here, Travis? Do they have a way out of this morass?
I mean, this is very reminiscent of the Bears when Justin Fields was a rookie into that second year, right, where you look at the roster and you're like, how much hope do we have, actually? Because, like, if you're rebuilding this thing, rumors are Deontay Johnson is getting moved, right? So that's not really a piece.
Right.
They have a good interior offensive line. They're paying for them.
Yeah,
but they are a good interior offensive line. Beyond that, two dudes on defense, J.C. Horn, Brian Burns, not Burns, sorry, the other guy, the interior tackle, who is out. And it's just nothing else. You know, they need everything else at this point. They have to look entirely to the future. The idea that they would bring another quarterback into this situation is just, it's laughable. There's no structure at all around them here. They're about to secure the first overall pick for the third year in a row. It's hard to imagine anyone else competing with them at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously we're rooting for that because we still own their second round pick.
Give us number 33, guys.
33. I don't know if there's, I can't go so far as to say there's no one competing with them because, I mean, I think the Raiders.
Oh, you're stretching, so you're like, who can? I don't know.
I mean, the Raiders literally just signed Desmond Ridder off a practice squad because they lost Aiden O'Connell, who they had already benched Gardner Minshew for.
They've already got two wins, though, Kyle. Like, can the Panthers get another?
Can the Panthers get? That's a good question.
Wait, where's the other win for Carolina? Like, see, this is the thing. We talked about this a little bit. I don't know if we put on the podcast or not, but we've talked about these old dudes coming in, right? These guys who used to be good and kind of lighten it up for a game or two. You know, Dalton did it. Mm-hmm. Flacco has done it a couple years in a row. And we talked about how, like, well, you know, one of these guys comes out and you're not expecting him. You weren't prepared for this guy. They have a bunch of rest. And then, you know, they do really well. And Dalton looked good against the Raiders, which is the Panthers' one win. And it was this surprise. We're not seeing Bryce Young. We just get Andy Dalton with all this rest, right? And then he looked pretty decent against the Bengals. But if you go beyond, like, two games with that backup guy, with that old backup, everybody remembers who he is. And then it's just, you're screwed again, right? Because he's just an old shell of his former self.
Yeah, it didn't take that long for the league to remember that Andy Dalton is Andy Dalton. Speaking of, you know, for those who don't follow me on Twitter, and if you listen to this podcast and you don't follow me on Twitter, I have to assume it's just because you don't have Twitter, and I would never advise anyone not to to course correct on that. So, you know, if you're not on there, don't get on there. But there's a fantasy football analyst. I believe his name is Denny Carter. He followed me for a little bit on Twitter. We were mutuals. Seemed like a nice guy. But, you know, I know this about, I learned this about Denny, and I've noticed this about a lot of fantasy football analysts, is they love football statistics. They love them. They think the numbers are gospel, but they don't seem to understand the concept of small sample size. So Denny overreacted to two bad games of Caleb Williams to start the year, and he really hard overreacted to one good game of Andy Dalton against the Raiders, and one of his readers said, should I have Andy Dalton or Caleb Williams for the rest of schedule for my fantasy football team? And he responded with, I'm very comfortable saying Dalton is the answer here. And so for the last 3 weeks, I have just casually asked Denny for an update on whether he's still very confident in that answer, and he chose to block me. I was very upset by that. I was just asking for an update. I was asking for fantasy football advice, Travis. The people need to know, like, do you still think Andy Dalton over Caleb Williams for the rest of the schedule is a good decision? That's so
incredible. Incredible. Just airing all your hardcore Twitter beefs.
My grievances. Yeah. I have the airing of grievances. A Festivus bye week.
I've got a lot of problems with you people.
You're going to hear about them. No, but yeah. And it's funny because, I mean, Dalton was obviously pure ass against the Commanders. And they had asked Canales if he was going to make any kind of change. And he was like, no. And that to me screams that they're done with Bryce. They're not interested in anything from Bryce other than, I mean, they have to start him this week because Dalton was in a car crash, but they're really, the only thing they're hoping for is Bryce Young gets to the season healthy and they're able to recoup like a modest pick for him. Even if I wasn't so low on this quarterback class, and, you know, obviously when draft time comes and when I start entering everybody into the spreadsheet, we'll have a lot more to say about that. But, like, even if there was a Drake May in this draft class or even just, like, a normal number one overall pick that you still kind of like a Baker Mayfield or a Kyler Murray, like, if you took 2019 Kyler Murray and you plopped him on this Panthers roster, do you think you're building a winner around that in 2 or 3 years? Like, they have nothing.
No, yeah, that's the problem. Like, they need everything, and they still don't have all their picks in this draft. Yeah. Like, yeah, they are so far behind.
Yeah, I don't know how, if you are a Carolina Panthers fan, God help you. I mean, Ryan Poles just fucking destroyed your franchise. Just wrecked it and left it a smoldering ruin. So, I mean, that's what I wanted to ask about the Panthers. Like, are they just permanently fucked? And I think this is the kind of thing, truly, that is the kind of trade that can set a franchise back for a decade. Like, in the NFL, you normally would like to think that nobody's more than, like, 3 years away from contending. But you can easily see, especially with the owner that the Panthers have, you could really see this turning into a Browns-type run or a Raiders-type run where 10, 15 years from now, you're still like, man, the Panthers never quite recovered from that one crippling mistake, did they?
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is that, like, to us, you know, we can say things like, oh, that Panthers trade is obviously the worst in history. Like, this is one of the worst moves ever made. It's going to cripple this franchise for the next decade. And somehow it's not the only case like that in the NFL this year. Like, Cleveland is just sitting right there, having willfully destroyed not just their roster, but their reputation. It's sold their soul to the devil just so he could be, like, the worst quarterback in NFL history. Their offensive DVOA, Kyle, is below negative 40% at this point. They are going for the record for offensive futility. So it's just, it's incredible, like, the highs and the lows of this season, like, seeing this rookie class excel as it has, and then watching these teams that, like, tried to take the next step, tried to make these big moves, and they just, they tripped over their own dick and then stepped on a rake and then shot their dick off.
Watching, now, like, watching Baker's resurgence in Tampa,
yeah,
parallel to what's happened to the Browns, has just been the most satisfying. I'm sad. You know, there was a lot of debate about whether it was appropriate for the crowd to cheer when Watson was carted off with injury. And first of all, yes, of course it was. Personally, as a guy who's not a Browns fan, I would have liked to have seen you guys have to just keep running that fucker out there every week. That's what you deserve as an organization.
Yeah,
is to have. Plus, every week, Austin Gale, who used to work for Pro Football Focus, he would do a weekly. He would run to see where Deshaun Watson ranked in terms of all quarterbacks week one through whatever week since 2000, which is as far back as EPA goes. And Watson was, I mean, he was gunning. He was in the driver's seat for the worst passing season since EPA was invented. And I like to watch history happen. So I'm a little disappointed that we're deprived that journey now.
It is fun because ever since Baker Mayfield was struggling after that injury and just going back out there and trying to lift the Browns up all by himself, we've been like, surely everybody notices this. Surely everybody knows that Baker is hurt, that he's not to blame for this, that this is a heroic effort. And that just to watch him get rat fucked and then come back like this and lead this wild Bucks team, and to see the Browns just cosmically eat shit. Just like the highlight of this season, like, even with the Bears being as good as they are, I think watching the Browns fail and Deshaun Watson just fucking just lose all of his mojo, deeply satisfying. Like, yes, please cheer when a guy like that gets injured. Like, we can all, Myles Garrett's response where he was just like, you know, he's a pretty good guy except for that one, you know, thing, you know, period of time where he did the bad stuff. I'm not here to excuse that, guys. Like if Mike Vick can come back and we can all pretend like being good at football has absolved him of his sins and redeemed him, I feel like if a guy like Deshaun Watson can come back and then be this horrible and then suffer a gruesome injury, maybe we could just chalk that one up to the opposite of redemption, right? Like, doesn't that work too, Kyle? We could just be like, oop, nope, sorry, you didn't get the redemption. You're a piece of shit. We get to boo you, buddy.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, the idea that people weren't allowed to cheer that man's injury was, yeah, I don't cotton to that, folks. But yeah, no, I mean, like I said, this quarterback class, we'll have a lot more to say about it in the months to come, but like, it looks so hopeless right now, and yet there are so many teams that like need to be,
yeah,
drafting a quarterback. I mean, you have the Panthers that are almost certainly going to have to move on. You have the Raiders who finally, at some point, you think have to make a fucking swing at a quarterback. You have the Giants who have to be nearing the end of the Daniel Jones experiment, you think. We know they made a hard push for Drake May in the draft this year. And Jones hasn't gotten any better. You know, there's a couple teams that probably are looking to make a quarterback move next year, and there's just not quarterbacks to be had. And one of those teams that might have to, that has two quarterbacks in their 2024 roster that are in a competition, if you will, but neither of them might be there in 2025, is the Pittsburgh Steelers, Travis.
Yeah.
So now I don't want to, we have the benefit, I guess, of discussing this after Russell Wilson led the Steelers to a big dub on Sunday Night Football. So we didn't have to talk about this and commit to our takes before that game when it was probably a little bit more controversial. But were you surprised by Mike Tomlin making the switch to Russell Wilson and turning away from Justin Fields?
I was not. The comments from Tomlin sounded a lot like the comments we heard when Justin came back in for Tyson Bagent last year, right? Where it was like, yeah, you know, this dude played well for what he did. He went out there and he was a gamer, and that's great. Also, when the starting quarterback comes back, the starting quarterback, you know, gets his job back. That's basically what I got from what Tomlin said. He was thinking like, yeah, Justin is the backup. Like, you know, Russell's not going to lose his job just because the backup played like a backup, like, and did okay. And I think Justin came out, and credit to him, he basically echoed the sentiment. He was like, this wouldn't be a debate if I played well enough. Yeah, you know, like, if I was out there being awesome night in, night out, like, obviously they would have kept me in. So if there's even a debate, if anybody has a question about this, of course you put Russell in. That's the way it was. Now, I didn't know if Russell was going to do well. I didn't know if he was going to do poorly, but I think it was the right decision from Tomlin, you know, just to see what he's got. Like, Russell was also, there's probably a little bit out there of the Steelers and Mike Tomlin having said, you're the starter, no matter what we do, you know, you're going to get some starts in here. But I think for the most part, it's just Justin Fields didn't blow anybody away. He looked like Justin Fields. Mike Tomlin is one of the best coaches in the NFL, and he's not going to fall for the bullshit. You know, he's not going to listen to the fans just because they're like, ah, look at all the potential. You know, he probably knows what happened in Chicago here, so he's seen this before. So, were you surprised, Kyle?
No, I wasn't surprised, and, you know, I got yelled at on Twitter because I get yelled at now for being mean to Justin Fields, which is very funny because a lot of people followed me when I was considered a Justin Fields apologist. But it all comes from the same place. I ground myself in, you know, the data and what it says and what the tape says and what history says about the developmental time. And so when there was, I felt legitimate analytical reasons to still believe in Justin Fields, I did, because you don't want to give up on a guy too early. We are past that event horizon at which you can reasonably expect a guy to change from what he is in a massive way. It's rare, and I think that with Justin, he's kind of in some ways like Jay Cutler, you know, because you said about Jay Cutler one time that, like, it did not matter the circumstances, whether he had good wide receivers, bad wide receivers, whether it was Mike Martz or Mike Shanahan. Like, in the end, in almost all the ways that matter, Jay Cutler would just remain Jay Cutler. No matter the circumstances, yeah, he would somehow never rise above or fall below the baseline level of Jay Cutler. And Justin's kind of that same way. Like, he has good games and bad games. He has good stats and bad stats, but the way in which he succeeds almost never changes, and the way in which he fails almost never changes. You know, when he has a positive game script, when the Steelers were able to control games defensively and run the ball, and to his credit, they were running him a lot too. He was their leading rusher in a lot of ways, so he was powering his own run game to an extent. But when they were able to stay ahead, stay on neutral downs, when they were able to do play action, when he was able to throw it short and outside the numbers, you know, and then take the occasional play action deep shot, things were good for them. And people made a big deal about how he had career high completion percentage, still does, career high passer rating. You know, he only had one interception. But to me, that was a product of them not, and he had a lower sack rate than his career. That was a product of the Steelers being so careful with him and understanding what he is. And the Steelers are not selling themselves. Tomlin is not selling himself on this myth of what Justin can be. He's trying to win games And he's dealing with reality and what these guys are. And he has no commitment to Justin Fields. Justin Fields is not his franchise's future. I think he knows that. So he's not out here trying to see what Justin can do. He thinks he has a pretty good idea. And after those first three games, when the, you know, they had a bad defensive outing against the Colts, they had to put up actual points. You never made a big deal of how Justin had his second career 300-yard game in that game, but he also took four sacks. He fumbled twice. He took a massive 20-yard sack in a key situation that took him out of field goal range. And then we saw against a Cowboys defense that's been terrible this year at home, he managed 110, I think, net passing yards, 13 points. And then against a Raiders defense that, again, Andy Dalton absolutely shredded, 135 net passing yards, missed a lot of open throws. Same thing that he always did. He didn't want to throw over the middle of the field. He turned down stuff. He made the wrong read, was too quick to drop his eyes and run. And yeah, I think what Tomlin understood is that, like, you can go back to this whenever you want. Like, you have established what your team's ceiling is with Justin Fields, and you should reasonably expect that it's not going to get much better than that. And you can always go back to that. Like, you can always go back to a Justin Fields ground and pound, try to win games on defense, use him as his own goal line back offense. You can go back to that at any point, but he had to see, you know, Tomlin looked at a Jets defense that's top 10 in DVOA. And he was like, okay, if this guy just threw for 135 yards against the Raiders, if he just threw for 115 yards against the Cowboys, I think he had 116 yards in a game against Denver. He only had 156 against Atlanta or whatever. So, you know, four of his six starts, he was under 200 yards as is normal for him. He's like, we're not going to win against the Jets throwing for 113 yards. I got to see if Russ can do something. And it's noteworthy that Russ, I don't even think that Russ played that well in that game. He looked pretty bad for most of the first two quarters, but he managed to hit a couple moon balls. He managed to make a couple really nice plays on the run. And Russ is not the best guy in the world at throwing over the middle field. He basically attempted nothing over the middle of the field, and he's not. But he can operate quick game a little bit better, and he can and beat the blitz a little bit better than Justin ever has. And at the end of the day, you know, you may say that wasn't a very impressive game from Russell Wilson, and I would agree with you. He had 264 passing yards in 38 of Justin's 44 career starts. He has not hit 264 passing yards. So if you're saying I wasn't that impressed with Russell Wilson, he didn't even look that good, the offense didn't look that good without it, he had a couple lucky moon balls. Well, sure. But that means a bad Russell Wilson game, still more passing yardage than 86% of Justin's career starts. I think, you know, some people still, we did the whole Scottcast versus Justin Fields episode last year. Some people are still really holding on to this idealistic version of what Justin could be. And I've said this so many times, it's year four. You need to stop looking at what you think he can be and look very hard at what he is. And Mike Tomlin did that. That's what Mike Tomlin did. He looked at what Justin Fields is. He did not get seduced by what Justin Fields could be. And he knew that it probably was not going to be enough to win them games on their schedule against defenses like the New York Jets.
Yeah, I mean, that's it in a nutshell. Tomlin's just looking at his two quarterbacks. He's looking at who they are right now. He's not looking at developing them. The Steelers are never looking at that. They're always looking at getting to the playoffs every single year. And he's like, this is what Justin Fields is. This is what Russell Wilson is right now. Russell Wilson is better. And that's just, like, how many different people need to tell you that Justin Fields isn't the guy before you believe it, you know? Like, if it's another organization, a coach who everybody's like, oh, is much better, Justin Fields. Oh, this is a much better coach, much better situation with Mike Tomlin. And then, like, what, 2 weeks later, because he's going to bench him for Russell Wilson, we're all just going to believe that Mike Tomlin's an idiot. Like, come on. Like, all of these different people have seen him. They're all like, that's not the guy. We're going to move on here. That's just the way it is. That's his reality now. You know, I don't want to dunk on him. I understand where the hype comes from, obviously. But yeah, this is just who he is, man. He's the kind of guy who's going to be a backup for a while in very specific situations where you have an offense that's capable of playing a game or two of Justin Fields' ball. That's kind of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and it's tough, too, because, like, people take all of this stuff so personally. I get accused of, you know, I talked about this a little bit last week, you know, where people are like, oh, Justin Fields is living rent for your head. Why are you still talking about him? He's not a Bear anymore if you don't care, blah, blah, blah. Because, first of all, in case you haven't fucking noticed, guys, I talk about football a lot. I find football really interesting. I talk about shit that's got nothing to do with the fucking Chicago Bears. I find the quarterback position interesting. But also, like, I watched the guy for 3 years. Hell, I watched him for 6 years. I watched him in college, too. I liked Justin Fields. I believed in Justin Fields. I was wrong. I think that's something that I'm apparently able to admit that a lot of people are not. You know, it's much easier to just blame the Bears for ruining him and blame this and that. And the Bears certainly didn't help him. But I mean, when you see him make the same mistakes, and you just eventually have to accept who the guy is. It's not personal. I'm not hating on Justin Fields. It's not hating on Justin Fields to say this is a guy who does not like to throw over the middle of the field. The numbers are there. Watch the goddamn tape too. This is a guy who does not like to throw on time. You know, and again, those last three games when he started to struggle a little bit, when the Steelers asked him to do a little bit more, the time to throw, which had gone all the way down to like 2.8 seconds through the first three games, ballooned up back over 3 seconds. The sack rate went from like 6% up to 9%. You know, he started reverting exactly to the guy he was in Chicago because the Steelers could no longer hide him. And that's what you have to do in a good game plan. You have to hide his weaknesses. But yeah, I mean, that's the Steelers. And do I think... I think we all want him to get 51% of the snaps so we can get that fourth round pick. And I would guess either there will be bad games for Russell Wilson, no doubt. It's coming. And he's also old, and he's coming off a calf injury. So I don't think Justin Fields probably started his last game for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but at the same time, no, in the end, I understood the entire time why Mike Tomlin was making the move that he was making. And it really wasn't so much about what they even thought or believed Russell Wilson probably is, but so much as what they knew Justin Fields is.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So should we talk about the NFC North, Kyle? We haven't really talked about the rest of the North on the pod yet.
Yeah. I mean, it's
hard out here, for the Bears.
It's hard on these streets, man. It is, yeah, it's hard on these streets because it would figure that the year that we finally think the Bears have landed a quarterback, they have landed a quarterback in the fucking Thunderdome division, you know? At this moment in time, I think we kind of agree that the Bears are, as is the fourth, they're the fourth best team in the division right now.
By until DVOA, overall, we've got Detroit at second, Minnesota at third, and Green Bay at eighth. So, yeah.
And the Bears are what? I was
17th right now.
I say they're still probably weighed down by how bad the offense was.
This is going to adjust because those first two games were so bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Washington should be helpful.
Well, even just, you know, for an example, Caleb Williams through the first like 2 weeks of the season, I believe, in terms of EPA, CPOA, was like 33rd. And even just since the start of the Colts game, I've seen a lot of people start with the Rams game, but I even go back to the Colts game because that was, to me, that was a normal up and down game. It wasn't like a bad game.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good game. It was just, that's a regular bad game for a quarterback like that. Even going back to the start of the Colts game, Caleb then is, you know, I believe eighth in EPA, CPOA, if you just take off those first two games. But that's how bad and dysfunctional they were as a quarterback and an offense. It's gonna weigh him down for a bit. You'd hope with this upcoming game against the Commanders, who do not rank very high in DVOA on defense, and then the Patriots, who do not rank very high in DVOA on defense, and the Cardinals, who do not rank very high in DVOA. You'd hope the Bears continue to rack up some numbers over the next couple weeks to bump them numbers up, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think the Bears, until they prove otherwise, so they start beating some quality teams, they're the fourth best team in this division. And yeah, I mean, does it suck? Yeah, it fucking sucks. I'd like to believe it would be awesome to have the rise of Caleb Williams coincide with one of those years in the NFC North where the Lions are ass and the Vikings are mediocre, and all you got to really worry about is the Packers and the Bears have an easy, clear, easy path to the playoffs. But that ain't the way the cookie crumbled. As long as this Bears team, you know, I still want to see 8 wins, 9 wins or better, and I want to just see Caleb continue to do cool shit. And I think they're going to win some games here. They might get to 5-2, 6-2, maybe 7-2 in the next couple weeks, and the playoff expectations are going to be high, and the anger is going to flow if they don't seal that deal. But for me, this season is still – that's not what this season has to be. I still think the main time to go all in is those next 3 years. But yeah, I mean, it's hard not to be impressed by what the Lions have been doing as one of the most efficient offenses I've ever seen the last 4 weeks. I mean, Jared Goff, they have more touchdowns than incompletions over their last 4 games, which is fucking insane. That is wild. And your boy, Jared Goff, he's having his best year yet.
I was going to say, you want to apologize to Jared fucking Goff, Kyle?
No. Huh? No.
No.
I have made it clear that I will apologize to Jared Goff if and when he wins the last game of the season. That's the bar. Because Jared Goff he's taken Kirk Cousins' crown as the chief Kirk Cousins, but he is the best quarterback you can have without winning a Super Bowl, I think. But Detroit's sure looking like the strongest team in the NFC, so yeah, he's got a chance to change that.
Because Caleb Williams is going to stop him, right? Caleb Williams will let him win.
Caleb Williams is going to stop him. And the Packers, with the Packers, with Jordan Love, I find the way people talk about Jordan Love so fascinating. And by fascinating, I mean it's fucking annoying. There is this theme, no one comes out and directly says it, but there is this theme among people I respect, the ball knowers, the film watchers, because they become so enamored of Jordan Love's pocket movement and his arm talent and the big throws he makes. There is this narrative somehow that the Jordan Love who was so good down the stretch last year is the real guy. And one of these days, the really great throws, all the touchdowns, all that, those are going to stay, but the interceptions will go away. Those are fluky. The wild overthrows, those are the flukes. The real guy is the elite quarterback. But to that I say, this is a guy who, in the spreadsheet, I believe he was number 109 out of one. I think their spreadsheets went to 123 quarterbacks. He's number 109 in terms of adjusted completion percentage in college. He was 30th last year in adjusted completion percentage. He is 30th this year in adjusted completion percentage. It's actually, and he's ranking pretty low in CPOE. It's very rare, actually, for a guy to be as productive as he has been with the accuracy issues that he's had. But I think it's a certain point when you have a guy who was inaccurate in college, who was inaccurate last year and has been inaccurate this year, at some point you call a spade. This is a guy who struggles with accuracy. He does. And I think that there's always going to be some volatility there, and there's going to be some turnovers there, because when you are inaccurate, you turn the ball over. We saw the guy that, hilariously enough, in a lot of ways, a guy that he kind of resembles, because I was looking at how low Jordan Love's adjusted completion percentage was, and I was like, who's an NFL quarterback that consistently ranked this low in terms of adjusted completion percentage, but was still some kind of good? Because most of the guys that are that inaccurate are just ass. So I was like, who's done this and has been kind of good? And the name that pops up is Jay Cutler. Yeah. There's a lot of similarities there. And it's like, they make just enough big plays. And granted, Love is in a much better infrastructure than Jay ever was in. LaFleur gives him a lot of layups and stuff, and some of those he misses, but he also hits a lot of triples and doubles. There's some Jay Cutler to his game, and I think the interception, at a certain point, this is a guy who struggles with accuracy issues. This is a guy who does make great throws, will always make big plays, and is also very good at avoiding sacks, which is huge. That we talked about this with a guy we're going to talk about here in a little bit with Anthony Richardson, but we were talking about him in the draft. But you can get away with being a little inaccurate if you also never take sacks. Because, you know what, if you miss the throw on first and 10, and you miss the throw on second and 10, but then you hit the throw on third and 10, it's all is forgiven, you know what I mean? But if you take a sack on first and 10, and suddenly it's second and 18, even if you hit the next two passes, you might not still not pick up the first down. So he can get away with being a little inaccurate by not taking sacks. But, you know, in the end, since he took over as a starter for the Packers last year, we have an 8-game stretch where he was the 25th best quarterback in the NFL by EPA CPOE. Then we had a 9-game stretch where he was the 3rd best by EPA CPOE. And now we have a 5-game stretch here, 6-game stretch here, where he is, I believe, 20th, maybe 19th in EPOA, in EPA CPOE. So when you put all that together, it's very weird to me that people look at the 9 games where he was the 3rd best quarterback in the NFL, and they want to single in on that as the real guy, but they want to throw out the half a season where he was a bottom 5 quarterback, and they want to assume that this current guy, who is average to above average, you know, moments of elite play, moments of really stupid play, they want to say that, you know, the stupid stuff, they want to do what I used to do with Jay, where it'd be like, if he could just stop doing the stupid stuff and only keep the good stuff, he's going to be really something. But, like, the stupid is just there, guys. It's baked in. I think this is – he's always going to be, I think, closer to good than great, which is fine. But I do think Packers fans have never lived in that reality where – you know, because even now people are like, he's not Aaron Rodgers. He's Brett Favre. But I'm like, okay, but Brett Favre's not the only guy who ever threw a fair bit of interceptions, guys. He could also be – Jay Cutler. He could be a Ryan Tannehill. He could be a number of these guys. But yeah, I mean, at a certain point, you start to look at the guy and you think, this is kind of what I said before the season when I was like, if it's for anybody other than a Green Bay quarterback, we would be looking at the fact that he way overperformed his peripherals, that he way overperformed his more stable and predictive analytics, and we would be calling this guy a regression candidate. And now the regression is happening. And he's not bad. He's still good. But the regression closer to, you know, like an above average to good quarterback versus an elite one is happening. And people are still denying it as it's happening. It's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, the Jay Cutler comparison is so obvious just watching the guy. You know, frustrating amount of talent, just makes some of the dumbest throws you've ever seen. I mean, the line between a Jay Cutler and a Brett Favre really is sometimes just that Brett Favre seemed to have a horseshoe stuck up his ass. You know, sometimes he'd whip the ball into double coverage down the field and just the fucking corners wouldn't get it. And suddenly it's, you know, 70 yards to Antonio Freeman. And he's got a touchdown. And I will say right now, Jordan Love sure seems to have a fucking horseshoe stuck up his ass sometimes because, man, he's got 8 interceptions on the season, but he has thrown 20. He has done his best to give every single Packers game away, and he has thus far mostly failed. But I expect some really weird Green Bay losses later this season. Just in the same way that, you know, sometimes you'd look at the Bears and be like, wow, this team's like unstoppable as long as Jay just doesn't turn it over. And then Jay's like, here, shitty 3-win team, take the ball 5 or 6 times and we'll just lose, like the much superior team. Because that's what happens when you get you give the ball away at the rate that Jordan Love gives the ball away. And that's why his EPA CPOE is so low, despite, you know, you look at him and you're like, God, he has all these big plays, all this yardage. Like, you know, he throws so many touchdowns. Like, how could that possibly be? Those turnovers really are that bad. And this is something that Packers fans just aren't used to at this point. But yeah, take it from us, the Cutler guys. Like, you could see a dude with all the talent in the world, like, just make a beautiful throw after beautiful throw and get all the way down the field and then just fuck the game up on one pass. That's Jordan Love right now. So yeah, I have heard the Favre comparisons and it makes me laugh because, like, I do not see Favre with this guy. I see Jay Cutler every time he takes the snap. Now, will that matter against the Bears in a few weeks? Probably fucking not. The Packers, for some reason, for no reason at all, the schedule makers gave them a goddamn bye week before they played the Bears. Why are you giving them extra help? But yeah, I related to that Packers bye week. When the Bears play the Packers, there is an honest to God chance, circling back to the strength of this division, that the Bears will be 7-2. Very good chance. The Bears are going to be favored in all their next three games against very bad defenses. They could be 7-2 and still in fourth place. All that has to happen is Green Bay has to beat Detroit, and every other game the North has got to be favored. As long as Green Bay does that, the Bears will somehow be 7-2 playing a 7-2 Green Bay team in a battle for third place in the fucking North. Can you believe this bullshit, Kyle? Like, I cannot believe this could happen.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to take it one game at a time, man. You know,
we break the season down into quarters here, Kyle. We learned that from Lovey.
We did. We'll get there when we get there. So yeah, I mean that's, and then of course you know the Vikings, the Sam Darnold. I early on in that game against the Lions, I thought the Sam Darnold was continuing turning back into a pumpkin after a pretty rough game against the Jets, but he made some plays in the second half for sure. Got him back, you know, in the lead there for a while. So Sam Darnold's still looking pretty good. Obviously, they have all kinds of offensive weapons. Kevin O'Connell's a very good head coach. And then you have Brian Flores doing some really great stuff defensively. I did laugh because someone was like, the Lions just gave the NFL the playbook for how to deal with Brian Flores. And I was like, well, yeah, no shit. Have the Lions offensive line. Like, that's just have the best offensive line in the NFL, guys, and then you can block up all of Brian Flores' shits. Just do that, you know? It's that easy. So am I still worried about the Bears versus Brian Flores? Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough division. We'll see how it plays out. I will say this, just like I said a couple weeks ago when it was the darkest days of this season, you know, Bears fans are used to being like, we got to bank all these wins here against these bad teams on our schedule because it's going to get really tough to win these games down the stretch, which is true. But the thing is, if Caleb is the dude and he's looking pretty dude-y lately, if Caleb is the dude, the math on those games changes, guys. You got a puncher's chance in every single one of them. So worry about that when we get there, but like if you continue to see growth from Caleb Williams, the ceiling for this Bears team is higher than you think you feel like it is right now, because you know at some point you don't have to look at the schedule and say like, oh, if everything breaks right, we could beat these guys, but we're not going to beat those guys. When you have a Caleb Williams and he's playing well, if everything breaks right, you could beat anybody. So we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you're the voice of reason here, because I'm on a 3-week countdown, Kyle. I'm like, oh, God, we got three games left against inferior competition, and then the hell begins.
Yeah, there's been what was I going to say?
Nope, he had a stroke.
There's been so much bad Bears football over the years that, like, I'm just enjoying looking at they're just enjoying having a good football game to watch every week. So I'm not going to look ahead past the Commanders game or the Patriots game or the Cardinals game, because I think the Bears have a good shot at winning all three of those games and putting up offensive numbers in all of them. And I'm just going to enjoy that as it's happening. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Should we talk about these Commanders? They are the next game. We've got like 15 minutes left to go. We might as well preview next week's game, right? We have Bears football finally. Jaden Daniels seems like he's probably not going to play at this point. We're recording this Wednesday night. And it certainly seems for all the world like Jaden Daniels isn't going to play. They're calling him week to week. I am of the opinion that sucks. I wanted to see the Bears defense try to put a stranglehold on him. It's the game of the week. You know, they flex it to the afternoon. Everybody's got eyes on it. It sucks that they won't be able to play against each other. You were like, nah, buddy, give me the win. Show me Marcus Mariota. Like, I'll take it. Absolutely. Does it feel like, you know, sort of like the Panthers and Jaguars game with Mariota at quarterback here, Kyle?
Sorry, repeat that.
Does this Commanders game without Jaden Daniels with Marcus Mariota at quarterback, does it feel more like the Panthers or Jaguars game rather than, say, like the Rams game or, you know, playing a team with the number three offense in the NFL?
I mean, it's tough to overlook them even with Mariota because of what they just did to Carolina. And obviously Carolina's bad defensively.
For sure.
This is a ridiculously efficient operation on offense that the Commanders have been running. So I think this is a much more competitive game than that. But at the same time, I mean, if Eberflus can't, you know, this is, I'll tell you this, Matt Eberflus, like, this is the first game this year for you to really earn that paycheck, man. If you are the defensive guru, you know, this should be a pretty damn good game plan. You'll be the best defense that the Commanders have faced yet. I'd like to see you throttle this Commanders defense or offense. And if they can do that, then yeah, they have a really good shot at having a fairly sizable win. But no, I'm not thinking of it the same way as I was the Panthers quite yet.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, this is a weird one because their offense is, their strength is definitely the running game. The running game kind of unlocks everything. They've got a 200 monster running back with Robinson and Austin Eckler. Really a three-headed monster because Jaden Daniels is obviously running a ton, but we're not going to see that here. And we kind of saw what you get when your quarterback runs that frequently last week. You get a broken rib, among other things, most likely later on down the line. The Bears, they've been good against the run when Andrew Billings is on the field. Once you take him off, it feels like they are a bit vulnerable. Billings has really thrived with a lower snap count this year, like taking like 60 to 70% of snaps, really getting a lot of breaks. We saw the last game the Bears played, the backup defensive tackles finally stepped up on pass defense. Chris Williams split two guys to get a sack, which was pretty impressive and like abnormal. Do you expect the Bears to maybe keep Billings on the field more here? Or do you think we're going to see the same kind of thing? Because that's really, I feel like that's the matchup to watch. If Washington is going to compete with Mariota at quarterback rather than Jaden, it's, can we stop this run attack? Because they're definitely the best run team in the NFL right now. So if we can't stop Brian Robinson Jr., you can't stop Eckler, that feels like the screw on which this game will turn, does it not?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to say, and if the Bears do make a deadline move, I still think hopefully it's to get a quality backup nose tackle. But yeah, I would hope that they lean on Billings a little bit more, and I hope they, yeah, the stopping the run is going to be key here, because I do think with our secondary and with how simplistic, and I don't mean that in an offensive way, like just if you look at the route concepts and plays that the Commanders use, they are very basic. The goal is to read things very quickly and get the ball out very quickly. With how simplistic their passing game is, you know, you would think if you can put them in true passing situations with Marcus Mariota and the Bears secondary, that should work to the Bears' advantage. So yeah, stopping the run, you know, you hate to sound like an old ball coach, but stopping the run first and foremost, very important.
Yeah, I think we kind of saw how you can stop this Washington offense from both Cleveland and Baltimore.
Yeah.
Early in the games, you know, play a lot of press coverage. You're going to be right up towards the line of scrimmage because either Jaden is going to throw the ball really quickly or it's going to be a run, right? And beyond that, it's like, yeah, if he holds onto the ball, it might go deep twice a game, something like that. So you do have to watch out for that with your safeties if you don't have the corners. But even with the injuries the Bears have in the secondary, we've still got maybe the best cornerback in the NFL. We've got Tyreek. Hopefully, you know, we have guys who can cover. Like, as long – Washington's roster state has not changed, right, from before this season. We talked about how desperate it kind of looked. They still only have the one wide receiver. You know, as long as Jalen is covering Scary Terry, they're kind of down to, like, a little bit of nothing. Like, the Bears' backups are good to cover these other guys downfield. It really does see, even if Jaden was in there, it would all be about stopping the run, stopping the quick passes, and then, you know, let the chips fall where they may beyond that. What do we have to say on the other side of the ball? Bears offense versus Washington defense. This is not a good Washington defense, and they've been hurt. Like, some of their better players who are actually having decent seasons have been injured. There's not really a standout on that side of the ball. I'm having difficulty even, like, pretending that the Washington defense is superior to, like, Jacksonville's defense, which is kind of, you know, Jacksonville has fallen on hard times, but I feel like the overall talent level on Jacksonville is even a bit higher. How do you feel? What do you know? What do you have to say about this Washington defense, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I think personnel-wise, certainly the Jaguars are probably a more talented team. I think Dan Quinn is a better coach than what Jacksonville had. But yeah, I mean, if you really look at, you know, people have talked about the impressive performances that they've gotten out of this defensive unit, but, like, if you really look at it, week one, they did basically nothing to slow down the Buccaneers. Week two, the Giants had a pretty good game against them offensively, or at least as good as Daniel Jones is capable of having, but the Giants were put into an awkward spot by the fact that their kicker was injured. And so they had to go for it on a couple fourth downs, where they normally would have just kicked field goals, famously. And on the last drive where they could have picked up a first down and basically run out the clock on Washington, Malik Nabers dropped the ball. And then, you know, they won a shootout against the Bengals. They lost a shootout with the Ravens. They held Deshaun Watson to 13 points or whatever, but pretty much everyone's done that. They held the Panthers to 7 points or whatever, but that's not that much of an achievement, as we know. Kyler Gordon's probably the only quarterback you could say that they put a good defensive effort against, but the Cardinals, and we'll talk about that when we get to that week, the Cardinals' offensive strategy and personnel this year has been very odd, even though I think Kyler personally is not playing that well, but or playing better than it looks. So yeah, I don't think that, and by DVOA and everything else, this is still not an impressive Panthers or the impressive Commanders defense. So the Bears should have opportunities, certainly, to move the ball. I would be disappointed if they don't. And then, yeah, in this matchup, especially if it's Marcus Mariota at quarterback, the Bears defense should have the advantage in that matchup, at least in terms of personnel, even with everything the Commanders have done statistically so far this year. So yeah, this should be, even on the road, I think, a Bears win.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like a Bears win. So obviously, you know, as Bears fans, we should be going into this game kind of like, oh, I'm wary, I'm nervous, we're going to blow this one or whatever. I don't get that feeling this year for some reason. Everything feels very, very solid, I guess, beneath our feet. Like, I get this anxiety, Kyle, and I'm sure you have this same thing when a Bears quarterback drops back to pass, right? Everyone before Caleb. And of course, you know, before Caleb kind of turned it around in the second half of that Colts game, just like, oh, God, I hope he doesn't do something that will embarrass me. Like, just every time a Bears quarterback goes back, like, oh, just don't do something silly. Don't do something that I'm going to see on, you know, SportsCenter. Don't do something that I'm going to see somebody retweet. And then Kyle's going to put it in my goddamn message feed so I can watch it. Like, just goddamn it, play competent football, right? With Caleb, he drops back and I'm like, well, you know, something's good is going to happen as long as the line holds up. And it's nice to go into a Bears game for at least one more week and just be like, man, you know what? I feel pretty confident in this team. They feel well coached, you know, props to Flus to this point, props to Waldron for, you know, managing to change what he does game to game, seeming to improve every week. I feel very comfortable going into this week. Again, I'm not going to predict like Bears by 30 or something, but I don't think the Bears are going to go out there and embarrass themselves, which is a big change, big shift, Kyle, from the last like 20, 30 years.
Yeah. absolutely. We sort of jumped ahead on my list of topics. It would make sense to end there, but I did have one other thing I wanted to talk about.
Oh, you see, I tried to skip right past it.
You did. So, Travis, in 2023, we did our first quarterback draft episode, and you declared Anthony Richardson your QB1 in that draft. And I declared CJ Stroud my QB1. And I even thought about declaring Anthony Richardson my QB2, but ultimately I chickened out just because of one reason. I named him QB3 because I thought Bryce Young had the higher floor, which is really funny because Bryce Young obviously has a very low floor, pun intended. But you know, I couldn't quite get there with Anthony Richardson to make him a QB2, even though I wanted to. Although I did say, if I were the Panthers, I would take Stroud and Richardson before I would take Bryce, because while I thought Bryce had a path to being a good NFL quarterback potentially, it was only on a good team. Whereas I thought Richardson, good chance he failed, but if he hit, he could be a transformative talent.
Yeah.
So Anthony Richardson, just this week against the Dolphins, completed 10 of 24 passes for 129 yards. He has started and finished 4 games this year. In those 4 games, he has completed 47.4%, 50%, 50%, and now 41.7% of his passes. He is at 48.5% of his 48.5% completions this year. I looked that up, the list of quarterbacks who have had a 5-game stretch over the last 10, 15, or 15 years or so. Mostly not very good, although a 5-game stretch were completing less than 50% of their passes. Although one of the best guy on the list to do it was actually the Colts' last great hope at quarterback was Andrew Luck did it over a 5-game stretch as a rookie. Important to note, though, that in that stretch, Andrew Luck, despite only completing 49% of his passes or whatever, threw for like 1,400 yards and had like 13 touchdowns in that stretch, because as a rookie, we remember Bruce Arians just having him fucking throw bombs all the time. Whereas Anthony Richardson over this time is averaging 156 yards per game as a passer and has just 3 passing touchdowns and 6 interceptions. So, Are you officially worried yet about Anthony Richardson? Because I know we both were like, you're going to have to be patient with him. You're going to have to ride some ups and downs. If you're going to take this guy, you've got to be committed to the ups and the downs and the whole project. But are we seeing the ups or are we only seeing the downs? Are you worried about Anthony Richardson at this point, Travis?
So my worries with Anthony Richardson have kind of like remain the same ever since last season, right? It's that he needed time. And we said this a lot in the lead up to the draft. Like, his biggest drawback is the amount of snaps that he has taken as a quarterback, not just an NFL quarterback, but like a high school quarterback and a college quarterback. This dude did not take very many snaps at that position.
He only had 455 dropbacks in college, I believe.
Right. And I think even in high school, I think the story is that like he was a starting quarterback his senior year, and that was kind of it. So it's just he does not have a lot of reps. So we knew going into this, Anthony Richardson is going to need like 2 full years of snaps, and then he got hurt. And I was confident in him not getting injured because of his insane ability to avoid sacks in college.
And to be clear, that would translate to the NFL. He's only been sacked on 3.8% of his passes on his dropbacks so far this year. He's got a very low sack rate.
And somehow the man keeps getting hurt. So like 4 because games last year.
They do keep using him
started
as a designed runner and he keeps taking hits.
Right. And 5 games this year. So this is his 9th game that he just played. So he's, a little over halfway through his rookie year if we go by games started. And this is exactly what I thought he would look like at that point. Like he was not the most accurate dude in college. He is exactly the kind of guy who needs snap after snap. He needs to refine his craft. He needs to play quarterback more. And kudos to the Colts for giving him this opportunity, continuing to run him out there and staying focused on him. But
yeah, to be clear, there's
like,
to be clear, there is,
how long are you able to do this? They'll be able to do it the rest of the year. Absolutely. Yeah. But like next year, there are going to be questions because he's not going to improve a ton before the end of the year here. He's only going to have like maybe a little over a full season of starts under his belt. And that's just, it's not enough. He's going to need a year three, and then we're going to maybe see the fruits of your labor in year four with Anthony Richardson. And that's so much time in today's NFL.
Right, because the last guy that we saw, and I think Anthony Richardson's a better prospect than this guy in terms of like processing and sack avoidance and you know, being willing to throw middle of the field, etc. But the last guy that we saw very similar to Anthony Richardson in terms of inexperience was Trey Lance, and the injuries put Trey Lance behind the eight ball because that was a guy who needed 600 dropbacks a year until he figured it out.
Yep.
And the injuries and the expectations immediately put him behind the eight ball, and he just couldn't keep up. And in a lot of ways, the worst thing that has happened to Anthony Richardson is that last year we saw Gardner Minshew be fairly competent in that Colts offense. And this year we've seen Joe Flacco be very good in that Colts offense. So it's hard to look at his struggles and convince yourself, you know, a lot of times when you have a young quarterback who's struggling, we'll all do the song and dance and we'll just blame the team around him. It's easy. It's a coping mechanism. But you have that counter example in Joe Flacco, as proof that like, no, it's not the team. It's just him right now.
Yeah.
And I also looked this up. It's not just, and it's people did point to drops and things like that, but in terms of adjusted completion percentage right now, which Pro Football Focus does, where they take out drops, throwaways, hit as he threw, batted at the line, they take all of those out. Anthony Richardson, his adjusted completion percentage is still just 59.3%. I went back to see when was the last time a quarterback with at least with a qualified quarterback in any season was under 60% in terms of adjusted completion percentage. Because in terms of adjusted completion percentage, you should be like 73, 74% minimum. You know, I was talking about Jordan Love, who's like 30th in that metric. And even Jordan Love is at like 72% adjusted. So it there's a difference between inaccurate and underneath, just historically bad right now at throwing accurate passes. The last guy to do this was Tim Tebow in 2011, the last guy to have an adjusted completion percentage under 60%. And people are pointing out that like, yeah, Anthony Richardson currently leads the league right now in yards per completion. He still has a respectable yards per pass attempt at 7.8 because he's hitting deep balls. He's making huge plays downfield. And so even in terms of like net yards per attempt and stuff, it evens out to a guy who looks a little better in terms of net yards per attempt than he does in box score stats. But at a certain point, as much as I would like to say that like adjusted net yards per attempt and all that is the end all be all, there has to be a factor of consistency in your passing offense. You really can't go 5 for 15, but as long as the five completions are 20 yard completions, you're fine. You need to be able to complete passes on 3rd and 3. You need to be able to keep drives alive. There is a certain point at which you're too far on that pendulum and you're breaking it. So, you know, obviously benching him for Flacco would be stupid. Some people say he needs to sit and learn. No, this guy needs the reps.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, I would feel like if you're not seeing serious improvements in terms of the accuracy by the end of this season, I would start to, you know, right now I'm probably at like a yellow with him. I would start to flip that warning light to red if we're not seeing big strides in the accuracy by the end of the year.
Yeah, I think the happy thing for Tony at this point is just like the Colts definitely aren't drafting a fucking quarterback in this draft. You know, there's just no point.
Yeah.
You're definitely going to roll with Anthony Richardson into next year. The bet with Anthony was always going to be this kid has barely played quarterback. And when he has, his coaching has been these jerks from Florida and they're shit coaches. Like the Florida coaching staff is awful. He basically hasn't been coached as a quarterback, right? It's a bet on pure talent, which he absolutely has, but it was always going to be this way. It's always going to be more reps, refine your accuracy, refine your motion, refine where your hips are and where your legs are. You are teaching a dude from scratch. So yeah, it's just reps. Like, how long will the Colts hold on? I don't know. Like I said, like to their absolute credit, they have stuck behind Anthony this whole time. There's never been a question about, like, are we going to shift to another guy? Oh, if things get bad enough. Nope. Anthony's the starter. That's the way it is. That's what you need to do behind this guy. Like, and it seems like they knew what they were getting into. The problem is just by this point in his career, he should be at like 26 games started and he's at 9. So if he takes another injury this season, if he goes down for another 4 games, that's when you get really concerned as the Colts, because you can't wait forever for this guy. The Bears did that with Grossman. This never works out. Like, the one time this worked out in history was in basketball with Steph Curry. Like, every other time a dude keeps getting hurt, he's going to keep getting hurt. And especially this dude who just needs the reps. Like, you can't push this timetable back over and over and over again. So what Anthony really needs to do is protect his body. Don't get hurt, so you can keep getting these reps. You can give yourself a shot. Or otherwise, yeah, you're going to go down like Trey Lance, right? It's going to be this big what if. Like, what if you didn't get hurt constantly? What if you didn't miss all these reps? What if we could have seen what this talent was? And that would be a damn shame.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hope it doesn't. You don't want there to be hypotheticals about his career.
Yeah.
Like, this is
if he sucks, I want to know. I want it to be a definite.
Yeah, you don't want to look back and say, what if? So you hope he stays healthy from here and he gets the reps. And you know, we said this was the risk with Anthony Richardson for sure. You know, and I still, you know, a lot of people are like, Ballard should be fired for even taking a chance on this guy. I don't agree with that at all.
No.
I mean, Ballard might need to be fired for other reasons, but that wouldn't be the reason I fire him. For one, that the next quarterback off the board was Will Levis, who's just complete and total butt. But for another, like, that's, you know, when you have a top 5 pick, you draft a quarterback for his potential ceiling. You know, you don't get scared of the floor. And again, if Richardson hits, if he puts it together, he's clearly capable of doing insanely special things. You know, the ability, even right now, in the midst of all the stuff he's going through and all the stuff he's working with, to lead the NFL in yards per completion, to still be averaging almost 8 yards per tip, that is impressive. It's skewed a little too much, but like, in terms of the YOLO balls, but like, that's impressive. The talent is there. And, you know, if you miss, you miss. You just gotta, you know, don't hang on to a guy too long. Don't talk yourself into him and pass the point of reason. But yeah, I hope he's not a guy that we end up looking back on like, oh, if he only hadn't gotten hurt. I want to get the tape. I want to get the reps, and I want to learn something from where Anthony Richardson goes from here.
Yeah, stay healthy, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's all we had to talk
about.
That's
good. I think that's a good bye week episode. Obviously, next time we'll be back here, we'll be talking about Bears Commanders and what happened.
So. Yeah, right. All right. Well, I'll see you next week. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.